Hey everyone, welcome back to another deep dive.
You
ready to jump in?
Always.
Awesome. So today we're looking at reader response criticism.
Right.
And to do that, we're going to be looking at excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Dave Mathewson on hermeneutics, and specifically we're looking at lecture 15 on reader response criticism.
Gotcha.
So
sounds fun.
Yeah. So it's like we're auditing a graduate seminar on interpreting texts.
Very cool.
And so what we're going to be doing in this deep dive is trying to understand how the understanding of interpretation has shifted over time.
Yeah.
And so we've moved.
Yeah. How has that happened?
From a focus on the author's intentions to the text itself.
Right.
And now with reader response criticism, the spotlight's on the reader.
Exactly.
So it's a really interesting shift.
Yeah.
Dr. Mathewson points out that this shift emerged because earlier approaches struggled to pinpoint a single objective meaning within a text.
Yeah.
Reader response criticism steps in and says, hold on.
Right.
Maybe meaning isn't fixed. Maybe it's created by the reader as they interact with the text.
Yes. And that's really, I think, a helpful shift to make, because when you think about the history of interpretation, we almost take for granted that the reader is creating meaning. But the emphasis for so long, especially within biblical studies, has been, no, no, no. We just need to get back to what the author meant when he wrote this, or what God meant when he inspired the author to write this.
That's right. Awesome. So it flips the script. Instead of just absorbing what's on the page, we bring our own unique experiences, beliefs, and background to the table, shaping how we understand and interpret what we read.
Exactly. And that's where the distinction between conservative and radical reader response comes into play.
Okay, so tell me about that.
Yeah, so conservative reader response acknowledges the text's inherent structure, while radical reader response takes a more fluid approach, suggesting that meaning isn't inherent in the text itself, but is created by the reader.
Okay, so conservative reader response, it's like there's a blueprint.
Yeah.
It's offering a framework for meaning, but leaving room for the reader to fill in some of the gaps.
Yes, and that's, it's almost like, it's hard to imagine or conceive of what a pure conservative reader response would look like.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you start reading and interacting with the text, you are doing more than just taking in information. You are allowing that information to interact with your lived experience.
Right.
You're thinking about, how does this apply to my life? How have I seen this play out in other situations?
Right.
But a conservative reader response, I think, is acknowledging that there is something in the text that is providing the boundaries.
Yeah.
So it's like a dot-to-dot puzzle where you have the dots and you're supposed to connect them.
Right.
But maybe some of the dots are missing. And so you have to kind of use your imagination or use the context of the other dots to kind of figure out where that line should go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that's conservative.
I love those choose-your-own-adventure books.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of like that.
Yeah, that's a great example because you're given different options.
Right.
But you're also constrained by the story itself.
Right.
You can't just decide that you're going to go off and do something else entirely.
Right.
It has to fit within the parameters of the story.
That's right.
But yeah, and so Dr. Mathewson uses some intriguing biblical examples to illustrate this concept.
Yeah. What are some of those?
Like, think about the birth narrative in Luke 2.
Okay.
The text mentions Mary and Joseph traveling to Bethlehem.
Right.
But it doesn't explicitly detail their journey.
Right.
We often picture them on a donkey.
Yeah.
But the text never says that.
We fill it in.
Yeah. We unconsciously fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
Drawing on our cultural assumptions and personal interpretations.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's just one small example.
Yeah.
Dr. Mathewson also highlights Robert Fowler's analysis of the feeding narratives in Mark.
Okay.
And Fowler argues that it's problematic to interpret those narratives through the lens of the Eucharist, because that concept hasn't even been introduced yet in the book.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Dr. Mathewson further points to the book of Revelation, which seems to presume an ideal reader.
Interesting.
Who is well-versed in the Old Testament and can readily connect the dots between the two texts.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It makes you realize how much we bring to the table as readers, even when we're not consciously aware of it.
Yes, absolutely.
But then we have radical reader response.
Yeah.
Which takes things a step further, right?
Yes, radical reader response.
Okay.
Championed by figures like Stanley Fish, suggests that the reader doesn't just find meaning.
Okay.
They create it.
Wow.
Fish famously posed the question, is there a text in this class?
What?
Essentially, he argued that meaning isn't inherent in the text.
Okay.
It's projected onto it by the reader.
That's a pretty mind-bending concept.
It is.
So for radical reader response proponents, the text is more like a mirror reflecting the reader's own perspective.
Precisely.
Okay.
It's like an ink blot test where the meaning isn't in the ink blot itself.
Yeah.
But rather in how the viewer interprets the shapes.
Right.
Fish argues that each reader brings their unique experiences and perspectives,
right,
resulting in potentially infinite interpretations.
So someone reading the Bible through a feminist lens might see different meanings than someone reading it through a historical lens?
Yes.
And neither interpretation would necessarily be right or wrong.
Exactly. And this is where it gets really interesting and tricky.
Especially when we're dealing with a text like the Bible.
Yes.
Which many view as containing divinely inspired truths.
Right. And how do you
hold
those two things together?
That's where things get really interesting.
Yeah.
A bit more complex.
Absolutely.
We'll delve deeper into those questions and the implications of radical reader response in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay, sounds good.
But before we move on,
it's
worth pausing to consider how these different approaches might change your own reading experience.
Yeah.
Do you see yourself more as a gap filler or an ink blot interpreter?
That's a good question.
It's a fascinating question to ponder.
Yeah.
It really highlights how reader response criticism encourages us to be more conscious of our role as active participants in creating meaning.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to stop for today.
Yeah, that's great.
So join us next time as we continue our deep dive into reader response criticism.
I see that.
Bye.
So radical reader response can get a little tricky.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to a text like the Bible.
Yeah.
If meaning is entirely up to the reader, how do we reconcile that with the concept of inspired scripture?
That's one of the key challenges that Dr. Mathewson brings up. If everyone is free to create their own meaning, does the text itself lose its authority? How do we navigate the tension between individual interpretation and the idea of objective truth?
Yeah.
Especially when dealing with sacred texts.
Yeah, it raises the question about the nature of revelation itself.
Yeah.
If the text is simply a springboard for individual interpretation,
how
can it be a source of shared understanding or guidance?
Yeah.
And on a practical level, how can we even talk about a text if we're all creating our own versions of it?
These are some of the tough questions that radical reader response grapples with.
Okay.
And Dr. Mathewson points out another interesting critique.
Okay.
If the text is just a mirror reflecting our pre-existing beliefs,
how
can we account for the fact that reading can sometimes lead to profound changes in perspective?
Right.
Think about a time when you read something
that
completely shifted your understanding of the world or challenged your deeply held beliefs.
I can definitely think of a few books that have done that for me.
Yeah.
It's almost like the text is pushing back.
Yeah.
Challenging me to see things in a new way.
Yeah.
That doesn't quite fit with the idea that I'm just projecting my own meaning onto it.
Exactly. Wow. And that leads to another important question.
Okay.
If there's no objective text, how can we evaluate different interpretations?
Yeah.
How can we determine if one reading is more valid or insightful than another?
Yeah. Dr. Mathewson brings up Stanley Fish's idea of interpretive communities.
Yes.
Suggesting that our understanding of a text is shaped by the community we belong to.
Yeah.
Our shared values, beliefs, and interpretive methods within that community influence how we read and understand texts.
But as Dr. Mathewson also points out, that idea raises further questions.
What kinds of questions?
What happens when different interpretive communities clash?
Okay.
Whose interpretation holds more weight?
Mm.
And can we ever truly break free from the influence of our communities and develop our own unique interpretations?
It seems like the concept of interpretive communities adds another layer of complexity to the whole discussion.
Yeah, it really does.
It makes you realize that interpretation is not just a solitary act.
Right.
It's influenced by social and cultural factors as well.
Absolutely. It highlights the interplay between individual and collective meaning making.
Right.
And it also raises interesting questions about the role of power dynamics in shaping interpretations.
Okay.
Whose voices are privileged within a particular community.
Right.
And whose voices are marginalized.
So radical reader response poses some serious challenges.
Yeah, definitely.
But even with these critiques,
yeah,
does reader response criticism in general offer any practical benefits for us as readers?
Absolutely, despite its potential pitfalls.
Okay.
Reader response criticism has made some incredibly valuable contributions to the field of literary studies and beyond. One of the most important contributions is that it compels us to be more conscious of our own biases as readers.
Okay.
We all come to the text with our own baggage, our experiences, beliefs, cultural background, and even our mood at the moment.
Right.
And those factors inevitably influence
yeah.
how we read and interpret what we encounter.
It's like putting on a pair of glasses.
Yeah.
That color everything we see. We're not objective observers. We're actively filtering and interpreting information through the lens of our own lives.
Exactly. And being aware of those lenses, those biases, can be immensely powerful.
Okay.
It helps us understand
yeah.
why we might gravitate towards certain interpretations
okay.
and instinctively resist others.
Mm.
It encourages us to be more humble about our own readings
yeah.
and more open to the possibility that we might be missing something crucial.
It's a reminder that we're not always right.
Yeah.
And that other readers, even those who disagree with us, might offer insights that we hadn't even considered. It fosters a more respectful and productive dialogue around texts.
Precisely.
And that brings us to another key contribution of reader response criticism.
Okay.
It emphasizes the active role of the reader in the interpretive process.
Yes.
We're not just passive recipients of meaning.
Right.
We're active participants, co-creators, engaging in a dialogue with the text.
There's that dynamic interplay. It's yeah. like a dance between the reader and the text.
Yeah.
Where both partners contribute to the creation of something new and meaningful.
I love that analogy.
And this active engagement
yeah.
can be a source of great joy and discovery.
Okay.
It allows us to bring our unique experiences and perspectives to the table, enriching the interpretive process and generating new meanings that the author might never have imagined.
So it sounds like reader response criticism can be a powerful tool.
Yeah.
But it's important to use it responsibly and thoughtfully.
Yeah.
Dr. Mathewson advocates for what he calls a balanced approach
okay.
to reader response. What do you think he means by that?
It's about finding that sweet spot
okay.
between acknowledging our own subjectivity and recognizing that the text itself has something to offer.
Okay.
It's not about simply imposing our will on the text, but rather engaging with it in a way that is both open-minded and grounded in careful analysis.
So it's a balance between the reader and the text.
Yes.
Between our own perspectives and the inherent qualities of what we're reading.
Right.
What would that look like in practice?
Dr. Mathewson emphasizes the importance of being aware of our presuppositions
okay.
and how they might influence our reading.
Okay.
We all have certain assumptions about the world, about the text itself, about the author's intentions. Mm. A balanced approach encourages us to acknowledge those assumptions
okay.
and to be open to the possibility that the text might challenge or even overturn them.
It's about being willing to be surprised by the text.
Yes.
To let it speak to us in new and unexpected ways.
Yes.
But it's not just about surrendering to the text entirely.
Yeah.
It's also about recognizing that the text itself has limits.
Yes.
That it might not have all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
That there might be gaps and ambiguities that
yeah.
invite our interpretation.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that interpretation is an ongoing process.
Okay.
A conversation between the reader and the text
mm-hmm.
where both sides contribute to the creation of meaning.
Right.
And it's a conversation that can be enriched by the perspectives of other readers.
Okay.
By engaging with different interpretive communities and by being open to new insights and challenges.
So a balanced reader response approach
hmm.
encourages us to be both humble and curious.
Yeah.
Open to new perspectives while still being grounded in a thoughtful engagement with the text itself.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
But it sounds like even with a balanced approach,
mm-hmm.
there are still some unresolved issues.
Yeah.
Dr. Mathewson acknowledges that reader response theory,
yeah,
especially the radical variety,
mm-hmm.
doesn't fully explain how interpretive communities work.
Right.
Or how they can change over time.
That's true. It's like he's opened up this fascinating new dimension of interpretation.
Yeah.
But we're still figuring out how to navigate it.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's the invitation for us as readers
yeah.
to keep exploring, to keep questioning, and to keep the conversation going.
I like that, after all, isn't that what a deep dive is all about?
Right.
Plunging into the depths of a topic
yeah.
and emerging with more questions than answers.
Exactly.
And yeah. speaking of the journey, It seems we're ready to move into the final stage of our deep dive.
All right, let's do it.
We've been on quite the journey, haven't we?
We have.
From author-centric to text-centric interpretations.
Right.
And now we've landed squarely on the reader.
Yeah.
Where do you stand in all of this?
That's the question Dr. Mathewson leaves us with.
Okay.
He challenges us to think about a text that has deeply impacted us.
Yeah.
And consider how our personal background and experiences shaped our understanding of it.
Okay.
Would someone from a completely different background interpret it the same way?
It's almost like he's asking us to become amateur reader response critics.
Precisely. To examine our own lenses.
Right.
And how they color our perceptions of the text.
It's both humbling and empowering.
It is.
Humbling, because it forces us to acknowledge our limitations
mm-hmm.
and potential biases.
Yeah.
But empowering, because it means we have agency
right.
in how we engage with and interpret what we read.
And that agency comes with responsibility.
Okay.
If we're acknowledging the reader's power in shaping meaning.
Yeah.
We also have to acknowledge the potential for misreading.
Right.
For projecting our own assumptions onto the text without careful consideration.
Which brings us back to that balanced approach Dr. Mathewson advocates for.
Right.
It's about finding that middle ground
mm-hmm.
between respecting the text and acknowledging our own role in the interpretive dance.
It's not about imposing our will on the text.
Right.
Or treating it as a blank canvas for our own projections.
Right.
It's about recognizing that the text has its own voice,
okay.
its own history.
Its own inherent qualities that we need to engage with.
But also recognizing that our unique experiences and perspectives enrich that engagement.
Absolutely.
And can lead to new and unexpected insights.
Yes.
It's like a conversation where both parties bring something valuable to the table.
Exactly. And just like any good conversation, it involves listening as well as speaking.
That's right.
Being open to being challenged by the text.
Okay.
To having our assumptions questioned.
Yeah.
To discovering new layers of meaning that we might not have seen before.
So it's a dynamic process, this interplay between reader and text.
Yes, it is.
And I love how Dr. Mathewson emphasizes that it's an ongoing journey,
right.
not a destination.
It's not something that you arrive at
yeah.
and then you're done.
That's right.
There's always more to discover more, to learn more, to unpack.
And sometimes the most rewarding part of the journey
yeah.
is realizing that there might not be one definitive answer or interpretation.
Absolutely.
That ambiguity can be frustrating.
But it can also be a source of creativity.
Yes.
And continued exploration.
That's right. It keeps us engaged. It keeps us asking questions. It keeps us coming back to the text.
That's right.
With fresh eyes and a willingness to learn.
And speaking of learning.
Yes.
If our listeners want to delve deeper into these ideas,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Mathewson's lectures are definitely worth exploring.
Absolutely. He's a great resource. And he has a knack for making even complex theories accessible and engaging.
Yeah, and that's what we strive for here on The Deep Dive as well.
Yeah.
To equip you with the tools and insights to become more informed, more engaged, and more empowered readers.
That's right.
So thank you for joining us on this deep dive into reader response criticism.
Yes, thank you.
We hope it's sparked your curiosity and given you some new ways to think about your own reading experiences.
Absolutely.
Remember, the most important question isn't what's this text mean,
yeah.
but what does this text mean to you?
That's right.
Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep the conversation going.
That's what it's all about.
Until next time, happy reading.
See ya.